Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
To reveal the full spectrum of its dazzling color.
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 8:04 the time. Hour 2 here on Sports 56 Mornings. The Thursday, May 9th, 2024 edition. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, Zach Boyd. Did I say that yet? If not, we are your hosts of this show, which you can hear every weekday from 7 until 10 a.m. The sun is now brilliantly shining, and that is a good thing after storms overnight.
Lots brilliant of and abundant.
Brilliant and abundant. Hey, that one I made up. That one I threw in there. Abundant was part of the forecast that I read in hour number one. Not there anymore. I don't see abundant
can
anymore.
Can the sun shine but not be brilliant?
Nah, it's always brilliant. It's a beautiful thing, man. 86 degrees for a high today, currently 67. Tonight, we're looking at 61 for a low, partly cloudy skies. And then the weekend, Friday, first of all, Saturday, Sunday, all look very nice before rain rolls in early next week. Hour two of the program brought to you by our friends at James Gattis Jewelers. Mother's Day is Sunday. So, folks, if you're looking for something special for mom, think jewelry, right? Flowers, come on. Candy, what are you kidding me? Candy's great. We love it. We love Dinstals. But James Gattis Jewelers, something very, very special is waiting for you for mother because she is very, very special. From beautiful rings, bracelets, necklaces, earrings, whatever the case may be, they'll have it for you at James Gattis Jewelers. Also, they are your bridal, engagement, and anniversary jeweler headquarters. So, guys, you're looking forward to popping that question this spring, this summer, this fall? Head on over to James Gattis Jewelers and check out what they have to offer. All their diamonds are independently graded and certified. They know there's a lot of competition, so they make sure there's a price point to suit everyone's budget. James Gattis Jewelers, they've been serving up Memphians for decades and decades. Check them out today. Head on over there. 4900 Poplar between Mendenhall and St. Nick. On the web at GattisJewelers.com. Tell them you heard it here on Sports 56 Mornings. It's James Gattis Jewelers.
Some text messages to get to here on the NBA. Mac texted. He said, small markets are a breath of fresh air. Oklahoma City, Minnesota, and Indianapolis have built in a nice way. Draft well and add nice vets.
I agree.
Which that's the way small markets have to do it. Just like the Grizzlies, like all these, like you're not going to go out and sign the big time free agents. So you have to nail the draft. Then you can usually hold on to those players because you could pay them more. And then, yeah, then you add around the margins to try and fill in those holes. And yeah, they've done a very nice job with that.
Well, in sports in general, it's not always the biggest market. It's not always the biggest payroll. I mean, a lot of times in the past it's been, you know, the Yankees, all their years of domination. But you look at recent years, a lot of small markets have stepped up. In the NBA, you know, Milwaukee winning an NBA title, that was great for the small market people. Now, you had the domination of the Golden State Warriors. That's a big market. San Francisco's a big market. But it has been a while for the Knicks to become relevant again. But I really agree with what he said. It is nice to see the smaller markets, the smaller payrolls in certain sports step up to the plate. Last year, and I know, was it Texas that had the big payroll and Arizona had the smaller one? Whatever the case was, that you had that mixture. And I love to see it, that it's not... I like dynasties to a certain extent, but after a while, it got a little boring watching New England every single year, the Patriots, right? Now you got new blood, but it's Kansas City. Kansas City's a smaller market. It's not Boston. So it's nice to see that, but after a while, we'll get tired of Kansas City and want to see somebody different. So I think it's not just smaller markets. It's seeing some new blood, whatever the sport may be.
He also said the Knicks haven't won crap in forever. This isn't about small market. This is about Indy getting outworked.
Yep.
Yeah. Again, the referees are not meeting before the game, discussing the fact that they want to make sure that the Knicks win because they're from New York.
Yeah, and I don't think the Knicks are in a position where they have this star power and they're going to get the star treatment. Jalen Brunson is becoming a superstar. He's not there yet. Jalen Brunson's not in the same category as LeBron James and some of these other guys that are going to get the benefit of the whistle. He's not there yet, so there's no complaints as far as that's concerned.
Jalen Brunson's only making $24 million. He may be the best bargain in the league.
Do you think they are playing as well as they have been playing, and this is going to sound weird, if they had Julius Randle?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ron says New York's hurt basically seven guys, but they bring the intensity. Yeah, I mean, especially that home floor. I mean, they, that place, you know. Brunson, again, they, like, Brunson is, he's just an absolute warrior-type player. And I, and those other guys kind of feed off of him. And again, I mean, Hart, you know, Hart is physical. Like, he's another one of those guys. Like, you just, they got, they, that Villanova three, mm-hmm. like, you can just, like, those are guys you want on your team. Those guys you want in the Fox. Again, last offseason, like, Dante DiVincenzo was the guy that I said, that should have been the Grizzlies' number one target in free agency. I love that dude, like, because he can shoot it, he can defend, he can do a lot of different things. I don't know if the Grizzlies tried or whatever. He went there very early. He may have just wanted to go to New York or anything else, but I love DiVincenzo. And, you know, with what Hart's doing right now, and then you add Brunson, like, those three guys are carrying that team.
Shocking that Jay Wright knew how to recruit when he was at Villanova, that he knew how to put a basketball team together. It's no surprise that these guys are playing the way they're playing.
Where are these other one? Raider Corey says, can we go ahead and fast forward to Knicks and Celtics? What a battle that would be.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're heading down that road, right?
Well, the Celtics will be Celtics will be in fast forward to that round. I think we'll see what happens with the Knicks when it gets to Indiana, but I don't expect it to take the Celtics very long to dispose of Cleveland and advance on to that Eastern Conference Finals.
So last night, Jaren Jackson Jr., I didn't see this, but he made an appearance on Inside the NBA. Zach, did you get a chance to watch it? I hit the sack.
The what again?
Jaren Jackson Jr.
I just watched the entire clip.
Okay, what did he say? Anything worthwhile?
He basically said that Ja, Chuck was asking him about Ja Morant mm-hmm. and everything, and he said, like, Ja is our brother. Like, we're going to support him. And I think Shaq asked what was their goal for next season, and he said basically, like, to remember this feeling of not making the playoffs, not just being sitting at home in the first round. And that using our age as an excuse, we can't use that anymore.
Right, right.
They're veterans now.
Yeah, and yesterday we were talking about Adam Silver and his office keeping up with Ja, and that they were very pleased with where Ja is, that he's doing everything that they expected him to do. The question is, one, can they stay healthy? The most important question with any team. Two, what are they going to do with the big man situation? And then three, once they get on the court, if they stay together, they should be really, really good. But how good? Have they been passed by teams? We know they're going to be good. We know they're going to be competitive. But are they number two Western Conference good, or are they number six Western Conference good? Are they a play-in team? What are they going to be once next year hits and they're clicking, hopefully, on all cylinders with the Marcus Smart? We still don't even know how that mixture of Marcus Smart with Ja and Dez and Jaren even works out, because we didn't see it much. But you look at Minnesota, you look at Oklahoma City, there's teams on the rise. San Antonio's only going to get better with Victor Wembanyama. Where is Memphis in the pecking order?
And of course, Sunday is the draft lottery, so we will find out Sunday where the Grizzlies will be picking in the first round of the draft. Tomorrow, we will do the official, unofficial draft lottery and see what we come up when we do the draft lottery with where who moves into that top four, possibly. But the Grizzlies will find out Sunday afternoon. I think it's at 2:30.
Somewhere in that neighborhood, yeah.
It's going to be on ABC, which it has not been on there. And so they're really playing it up, but Sunday afternoon, the Grizzlies will get the official word on where they will be picking in the first round of this year's draft.
And once again, Tayshaun Prince will be representing, I don't mean him again, I mean we talked about it yesterday once again. Tayshaun Prince is going to be representing the Grizzlies as the personality, the person, the face on the set. I would imagine Zach Kleiman is behind closed doors. But I had heard this, I did not know this, that Elliot Perry, who normally goes there, has just lost his mother recently, and certainly want to send our thoughts and prayers out to EP, one of just the great people, not only in this city, but I've ever known, and certainly want to send our wishes and thoughts. But that's why I guess he's not there, and Tayshaun will be there. But Sunday's going to be very, very important to see where the if the Grizzlies are picking way up there. You know, it seems like they have the possibility of getting their center. If they're not and they're picking eighth or ninth in that area, they probably won't have that option unless they're moving up or doing something like that. So we'll see which direction they go. There's always a trade possibility. So it's going to be a very important day.
And don't forget this, because I know in the past people have had the talked about how the Grizzlies are extremely unlucky, all this stuff. Whatever happens on Sunday, do not try and say the Grizzlies are unlucky in the draft lottery, because they had the ultimate luck in the draft lottery. So don't ever try and say the Grizzlies are unlucky in the draft lottery again. We've lost the right to say that.
College football note, Pete Thamel reporting that former Vanderbilt Mississippi State quarterback Mike Wright has committed to Northwestern. Wright has one season of eligibility remaining. He has 14 career starts, 11 at Vanderbilt and 3 at Mississippi State.
Vanderbilt, Northwestern, and Mississippi State. Which one of those is doing their own thing? I kid Bulldogs fans. I'm sure you are a fine institution.
They are.
Not quite in the Vanderbilt Northwestern level, but you're a fine institution.
Sonny Dykes yesterday, the head coach of Louisiana Tech, speaking, I think on a podcast, may have been a radio show, predicts, and this is something I have said all along, predicts that the future split among P4, or predicts a future split among P4 and G5 schools. This was a quote, great quote. Alabama and Louisiana Tech aren't playing the same sport. So there's another coach, chalk up another coach, that feels that it's inevitable. We are heading down that path of that split between the P4 and the G5 schools. There are some that feel we are heading down that road to a split of the Big Ten and the SEC branching off. But I think it is more likely the P4 splitting from the G5, which again goes back to the poet laureate Jackie Sherrill, speaking of Mississippi State, who said it on our airwaves years ago that there would be the four major conferences and that's it. And it looks like that's a possibility. Sonny Dykes certainly believes so.
We shall see.
And I'm telling you, he is not the only one. All right, back to the NBA versus the NFL. We didn't talk about it yesterday, but it was a topic of discussion on a lot of national shows, whether or not NBA players would have an easier time trying to become professional NFL players, while NFL players going to the NBA would have a easier transition. I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer. It's just people's opinion. And I think I was going back and forth with a few of my friends on Twitter, and they made a great point about when I said I think it's easily NFL players going to the NBA, because a lot of those NFL players played multiple sports, were really good. And I think of Tony Gonzalez, who was a great, great player, played basketball at Cal, turned out to be a Hall of Fame tight end. But, and I said, you know, some of these NBA guys making the transition to the NFL, you know, some will be speedy receivers, but go over the middle and get crunched, get hit for that first time. I mean, there's only so many really physical players in the NBA anymore. So I said, that'll be a hard transition for them. And the person said, well, they don't do as much hitting in the NFL as they used to. And it's a good point, because the rules certainly favor the offense and not as much the defense, but it's still a physical game. Not that you can't get injured in the NBA. We certainly know that. The Grizzlies know that firsthand. But a lot of times it's because of awkward falls by them on their own, or pulling a hamstring, or ripping a tendon, doing something that they do, that they cause themselves, as opposed to a collision of some sort, especially at a high rate of speed, with velocity and veracity, that causes the injuries that we have in the NFL. So to me, I think it's a harder transition to go from the NBA to become an NFL player. I'm not saying it's impossible. Where are you on that debate in this day and age?
First, wondering why we're having it. I don't understand why this was even a thing. Like what the point was to even start it.
It had to have been some player. I'm trying to remember what. Oh, I know what it was. It was Austin Rivers.
I know who's, yeah, but why? Like, what point was he trying to make?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know why he said that. But, I mean, he put his fist down. He said, there's no question.
I don't think, I mean, to me, there's, I mean, if you're talking about who has a better chance, I would say absolutely the NBA player going to the NFL would have a better chance.
So you agree?
I don't think it's close. Well, first of all, we've seen the basketball players go become, like, Hall of Fame players in the NFL.
Okay.
Tony Gonzalez, Antonio Gates, like there are guys literally who become basketball players from college who went changed over to football and became Hall of Fame players.
Wait, no, you just said the opposite.
It's a basketball player going to the NFL. That's by far easier.
I think the NFL player going to the NBA would be easier.
Why? How?
Because a lot of those guys...
Who of the NFL guys are going to go play be good NBA players?
I think a lot of those guys have played high-level college basketball or have played basketball that they can make that transition.
I mean, you can...
Because they're great athletes.
Literally, Julius Peppers, Tony Gonzalez, Antonio Gates, there are going to be three Hall of Famers who were basketball players.
Okay.
Maybe the guy who was a college football player... Who then went on to basketball? I mean, Charlie Ward was a good NBA player, but like, who are the guys that were just like football players and that couldn't make the NFL, so they decided to go play basketball and were really good?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about it in general terms that I think it would be harder for the basketball player to play in a league that is that physical, with the exception of guys like LeBron James in his prime, not at 39 going on 40. Like, LeBron James can play in the NBA at 40. LeBron James ain't playing in the NFL at 40.
No, but LeBron James at 30 would have been an unbelievable...
I think so, too.
He'd be a Hall... He would. I don't have any doubt he would be a Hall of Fame NFL player.
I think so, too. I think that
But I think there's a ton of guys in the NBA who could go be tight ends, receivers, defensive backs. Like, who out of the NFL... who translates to the NBA game?
I think there's a lot of guys that could do that. I'm trying to think right off the bat, but I guarantee you that there are quarterbacks that have played, there are wide receivers that have played, there's probably even big linemen that have played, but played in the paint, back to the basket guys, you know, like...
Those big linemen aren't going to play in the NBA. They couldn't play in the NBA.
Well, probably not now, because they're big... oversized and overweight guys because well, they have to have that girth.
Is that not what the discussion is? Who could go from the NFL to the NBA or from the NBA to the NFL? Well,
I would imagine you give them a chance to make that transition and to get into basketball playing shape or football playing shape or whatever it takes. I don't know. Zach, what do you think?
I would say right now you could take, I would guess there's this out 100 guys in the NBA who could go make an NFL roster right now. If they dropped the NBA, went to the NFL, they'd make an NFL roster.
Do you really believe that?
And I don't think there's, now granted, there's a different number of players, so it's a little different. I don't think there's 10 guys in the NFL that would make an NBA roster.
Oh, I don't believe that. Zach, what do you think?
I think NFL players can make an NBA roster.
I think there's no question.
Like, those dudes are talented. Like, seeing Micah Parsons and Puka Nacua, like, in a celebrity game, just bigger, stronger than the average person. Like, yeah,
game. You think Micah Parsons would make an NBA roster right now?
I think so.
No way.
All NFL players, they're just power players because they're just bigger and stronger. But I think if they had the amount of time like NBA players to train up their craft, I think they can make that transition.
I mean, who do you think Dante DiVincenzo is going to go and play in the NFL? I mean, I think there are certain players in both that would do it.
Dante DiVincenzo, why? I mean, he could be a defensive back. He could be a receiver. Like,
oh come on, you're real. I think what you're doing is you're.
Why would he not be able to?
Because he's not an NFL player, man. I think what you're doing is I'm trying to think of the right word. You're not giving NFL players enough credit for their craft. for being professional.
No, they're great at their craft. I'm just saying, I don't think they could transition to the other craft as well as the.
I mean, we need to get Jarrell Elder back on and see what he has to say about that.
In the NFL, they're begging for like 6'2 and 6'3 receivers. Well, you know what all the NBA guys? That.
Yeah, at 125 pounds, I mean, those guys would get killed. They get broken in half by somebody hitting them. Can you imagine those guys? Those guys aren't used to physicality. They aren't used to getting. I mean, the Charles Oakleys of the game are gone, man. There's not that many of them left. We can put Victor Wembanyama. Yeah, you can throw it up there in the end zone to him at 7'5" or whatever he is.
I did three basketball players who became Hall of Fame NFL players. Name me the football players who became the great basketball players.
I'm not saying it's not possible in one or the other. I'm saying it's very possible for both. But I still think there's more that can make that transaction. If you want to comment on that, folks, hit us up on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener lines at 901-360-8255. When we come back, we're talking baseball as we do each and every Thursday with Kerry Miller from Bleacher Report. Right now, I want to talk hot wings. The Crazy Coop, America's premier wing destination, has 32, count them, 32 delicious flavors to choose from, and they're always looking to add. They've just added the Crazy Lemon Twist. It's a savory, zesty, and citrusy taste of fresh lemon twist. If you like it hot, the Crazy Sweet Lemon Pepper Hot, the Crazy Suicide. If you can't take the heat, get the 4-cheese roasted garlic or the barbecue bacon bourbon. That's just some of the choices you can get at the Crazy Coop. They're located at 7199 Highway 64 between Appling and Kirby Whitten. It's where Bartlett meets Memphis. They got a Crazy Coop special going on right now where you can choose from 3 whole wings or 6 party wings, fries, and a drink, all for just $9.99. They got great catfish sandwiches, juicy half-pound burgers, delicious sides like fried okra, fried dill pickles, and green tomatoes. They're open 7 days a week from 11 to 9, so for lunch or for dinner. All the services can deliver to your home or office. You can just order and pick up yourself. You can ask about their catering services as they'll cater any event you got coming up. Again, just check in with them and find out what the particulars are with the catering. And you can find them on Instagram and Facebook. Family owned and operated. The Crazy Coop, America's premier wing destination. You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Join the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin, for Wolo and Friends. Weekday mornings from 10 to 11 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now, back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Isn't it a lovely morning?
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 8:30 the time, halfway home on this Thursday edition of Sports 56 Mornings. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, Zach Boyd with you. And now time to be joined by Kerry Miller.
It's time to talk some baseball. Joining Greg and Eli is Kerry Miller from the Bleacher Report. Here's Kerry with Greg and Eli.
Now that's a guilty pleasure song right there. Aha's Take On Me. He is Kerry Miller, sports writer for Bleacher Report, covering Major League Baseball, college basketball, and other things as well. You can follow him on Twitter at Kerrins James. He joins us each and every Thursday, including right now here on Sports 56 Mornings. What's going on, Kerry?
Hey, guys. I will never tire of that song. I wish Michael Morse was still playing for the Nationals so we could hear it on a daily basis in the stadium.
We were talking about that with a member of the Memphis Showboats earlier about a guilty pleasure song. And then when your intro came on, I said, that would work. I think that would be perfect. All right. First, I wanted to start off with the Paul Skeens call-up. I know that is much anticipated, and we can't wait to watch this guy pitch. Do you think it's going to be a seamless transition?
I hope so. It's been a rough year for, you know, rookie call-ups, you know, specifically Jackson Holliday, Wyatt Langford for the Rangers, who's now going to be out for like a month with a hamstring injury. I mean, he was awesome in spring training and just hasn't been able to deliver thus far. I mean, outside of like Imanaga and Yamamoto and for the Cubs and the Dodgers, it's been kind of disappointing on the rookie front. But man, he's been lights out. I think he's got like a sub one ERA at AAA, which that's pretty good. So we'll see if he can deliver. But man, Pirates, man, Jared Jones, Quinn Priester, now Paul Skeens, like they all of a sudden have a very tantalizing young pitching core. You know, if Martin Perez and Mitch Keller continue, they might have like a top five pitching staff. Can that make sense in Pittsburgh? It's pretty wild.
Yeah, but in 4 years they'll all be pitching elsewhere. If history is any indicator, they could have waited. I would have been fine if they would have waited to bring Skeens up until wasn't against the Cubs. Like I don't need to see him against the Cubs in his first outing. But yeah, 27 in the third innings at AAA, 3 runs, 45 strikeouts. I mean, that dude, like, I am really interested to see though how he does make the transition. Because you mentioned, yeah, I mean, the two Japanese guys, like, it's amazing what those two continue to do now. I mean, they're basically, Imanaga now is just over one with his ERA after he gave up a 2-run home run the other night. And Yamamoto, after that horrendous outing to start the year, has his ERA down to like 2 or something now still.
Yeah, I think if you take out that 5 runs in one inning against the Padres in South Korea, it's somewhere in like the 1.4 range, something like that. I mean, he's been ridiculous. It does seem to get to start against sub 500 teams more than just irrational. I know his last start was against the Marlins. He had a really nice outing against the Nationals, although they are now 500. Let me be sure to mention that.
Yep.
Nationals all of a sudden might have something brewing
break
too.
Break them up.
But yeah, Imanaga, it's a shame they let him go back out there for the, was it the 7th or the 8th inning?
It was in the 8th, yeah. They got a 2-run shot.
ERA balloon from 0.65 to 1.08 or whatever.
I like the fact, though, that in baseball, even a guy like Paul Skeens, who everybody expects to be a big-time hurler in the bigs, they took their time with him. I mean, it's not a lot of time, but they took their time starting him out in the minor leagues, as opposed to the NFL, where these quarterbacks are thrown right into the fire right off the bat. I guess they have, they don't have the economics aren't the same where they have to play these guys, but at least they give them a little chance to get adjusted from the college game to pro baseball.
Yeah, but I will say that's why nobody ever cares about the MLB draft, right? Because we know we're not going to see these guys for like 4 years most of the time. And looking back over the years, I'm actually working on something for this weekend on, former top prospects, top picks who are still like, trying to cut their teeth in the majors. And like, there was a stretch there where the number 6 overall pick like amounted to nothing at all, like 7 out of 8 years. Like, it's wild how low the conversion rate is from top prospects to actual success in the majors. But I do agree that it's nice there's not that immediate rush, although once the team is somewhat competent, right? My Nationals now, they're 18-18, and I'm like, all right, it's time to call up James Wood. Is Dylan Cruz coming? Like, we want these top prospects as soon as we have something to play for.
The what in the world has gotten into Marcell Ozuna?
Yeah, of all players to be leading the majors in home runs, I would not have picked him before the season. But yeah, he's been on fire. The Braves have not got swept by the Dodgers. They're now, what, 3 games behind the Phillies in
two.
The East?
Two.
Oh, sorry.
No, I wish it was 3.
They impressive for him to be doing that. And God knows they need it because Matt Olson and Ronald Acuna Jr. have not been what they were supposed to be.
See, that's what it's like. They come up with these things. People are coming up with all these theories about like why this guy's not hitting, why the pitcher, like everything else. But like, Acuna's struggling, but like Marcell Ozuna's like killing everything. So you can't be like, oh, what's this? Well, no, he's playing on the same team and he's destroying the baseball.
Yeah, and I mean, Acuna's had more strikeouts than usual. I need to like actually look into more of what's actually going on with him. I thought it was just a slow start, but it is persisted for quite a while. He's still going to steal like 80 bases though. Him and Ellie De La Cruz are like battling for first place of all time in recent stolen bases. But it's wild that really only Ozuna is hitting particularly well for the Braves, and they've still, I mean, they're 10 games above 500. They're not disappointing, but it feels like the top teams right now, like the Dodgers are just out of control, the Orioles, the Yankees, like all these teams seem to be really hitting their stride, and the Braves, it still feels like something's really lacking there, even though they are 10 games above 500.
Well, speaking of the Braves, you lose Strider, so you lose their ace, but Chris Sale has had a rebirth. This is a stat that comes from our buddy Sean Coleman, and it surprised me. Chris Sale is the only Braves pitcher in franchise history, and they've had some pitchers, to produce 50-plus strikeouts and post an ERA under 3 through his first 7 starts with the franchise. So he's come in, and it's the Chris Sale that we know from the Cy Young Award.
Yeah, and now for the rub, are you betting on him staying healthy for six months?
No, I'm not. But you got to roll with it while it's working, right?
Yeah, and got Reynaldo Lopez as like a 1.5 ERA or something absurd. So they've been pitching still pretty well, even without Strider. Their bullpen has been one of the best in the majors as well, although they're kind of falling apart. Lost Pierce Johnson not that long ago. Matt Zech's been out. So I feel like they should be better than they are, and yet they're, again, 10 games above 500. We're just waiting on Olsen and Acuna to wake up, and then maybe they will not get swept by the Dodgers next time they play them.
Have you ever seen a catcher get hit in the forearm by a batter swing?
Like, yeah, what usually it'll nick the glove, yes. Right? I know that they've been talking about that for a while, that they've been, you know, focused on having him be further up in the, you know, closer to the plate to try and get more called strikes. And I know J.D. Martinez, like, notoriously is one of the biggest backswings in all of baseball. So it was kind of a perfect storm there for that to happen to Contreras. But, man, that was wild. Man, what are they, six, seven games below 500, yep. And now they lose arguably one of their best hitters. Goldie's not hitting. Arenado's not hitting. What's the mood like there in the St. Louis area?
I can tell you, I was there to watch the 3 games against the White Sox. I was at Busch, and to hear actual Cardinals fans, who are the nicest fans, I think, in sports, not always the best thing, but they started to boo. And when they're booing, something is wrong, because they're used to having a winning team. They're used to having a team that's competitive, but they always give the organization the benefit of the doubt. I was so against Marmol being retained last year, let alone getting an extension. And now they're coming after Mozeliak and Marmol. But some of the decisions he's made are horrible as far as in-game decision-making, watching with my very eyes at the stadium. But also the lack of offense. They have so many holes in that lineup. You mentioned Goldie, one of their high-priced, high-soured guys, not hitting like he would normally do. Arenado's come out of his funk a little bit, and then Contreras was starting to hit. He had a good series against the White Sox, and then he gets hurt against, who was it, the Mets? But the point is, they lose 2 out of 3 to Chicago. To the White Sox, for goodness sakes, who are anemic, had lost 9 straight road games coming into the series. It is bad. It is bad. So I don't know what you do. You just gave the coach an extension. And Mozeliak, do you know how many years Mozeliak has left?
I thought
it was his final year of his contract, but something needs to be done. If it doesn't get rectified and fixed, Kerry, by season's end, something has to be done.
If it does go the way it looks like it probably will, again, you're one of the worst offenses in baseball, and now you've just lost the guy who's been your best offensive player this year. Do they turn around to trade Sonny Gray at the deadline?
Yeah. I mean, we've already been, obviously, with the Luis Arraez trade. How often do big trades happen in early May? Never.
Right.
We're already starting to think about the trade stuff, right? And, you know, certainly the Cardinals are one of the teams that could be a seller. Obviously, if Goldie ever starts to hit, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the season. That's the obvious, you know, low-hanging fruit. But, yeah, Sonny Gray, $25 million next year, $35 million the year after that. I mean, they could get out from under that contract while he's still pitching at an ace level. Like, they'd get a lot for him if they do trade him away, and then, you know, kind of save you from a potential rebuilding sort of year when he's, you know, 36 and making $35 million. That's no fun. I've witnessed that firsthand with Patrick Corbin this year. But, yeah, I think they could be sellers. They don't have a whole lot to offer because, obviously, they traded a lot last year, too. But we'll see. Outside of those three, you know, truly unmitigated disasters in Colorado, Miami, and the White Sox, I don't think it's, you know, reasonable to start talking about selling yet for anybody.
Because Goldschmidt, they may have waited a year too long. Maybe they should have traded him last year, because if he doesn't come out of this, he has no value anymore to anybody.
Well, what you said, Gary, makes sense, but I'm telling you this. If they don't have Sonny Gray, they may not win a game again the rest of the season. He is the only thing they got going for him. Kerry Miller is joining us on the Sissy's Log Cabin guest line. Okay, couple of things that you mentioned, Arise. All right, so what an impact in game one. What a debut with the Padres as he gets four hits. We know the Padres have the offense, even with Soto gone and now in New York. We know they have the offense. Do you expect the Padres, who are 20-20, to be very active trade deadline to get a little bit more pitching help and then maybe make that run to get into the postseason even as a wild card?
I think they're certainly the most aggressive franchise out there almost, right? With A.J. Preller, I think outside of, and I always butcher how to pronounce his name, Alex Anthopoulos at Atlanta, like A.J. Preller is the most well-known GM in baseball because they've been so active for a while now. But I don't really know how much they need to do. They need Musgrove to get healthy. Dylan Cease has been fantastic. Yu Darvish has a sub-3 ERA. Like, they just need at least one of the guys that they got in the Juan Soto trade to, you know, do what they expect him to do. Like, Michael King has been a bit disappointing. Randy Vasquez, they just recently called him up. He's not doing much. Johnny Brito is not really doing anything. So, kind of feels like they got absolutely nothing out of that Soto trade when it felt at the time like it was a pretty decent deal for them. So if any of those guys come around, I think they'll be fine, but I'm sure they will still be buyers if they're, you know, still sitting around 500.
Are they okay in the pen?
Suarez is awesome. Yeah, I think he's leading the majors in saves. He's got like a 0.6 ERA, but yeah, they could use some more middle relievers for sure.
Yeah, the Suarez band against the Cubs, that dude was, I was like, wow. That he came in, was like unhittable.
Yeah, for them to get rid of Josh Hader, I mean, I know they didn't trade him away. He hit free agency. But to lose Hader and then have Suarez just become Josh Hader 2.0, while Josh Hader has been an absolute disaster for the Astros, at least something worked out for them this offseason.
Yeah,
why is it that when Hader first switches teams, he's terrible?
Because
he first went to the Padres, he was bad. Then he was good. And now he goes to the Astros and he's bad to start there.
Yeah, so they're hoping he'll follow that same script, because I think he has 3 losses and 3 saves. I know he's blown a couple of saves as well. And granted, Houston hasn't given him many save chances, so it is what it is. But yeah, I do not get the Astros. Altuve and Pena are like in the running for the AL batting title. Tucker's
homered the last 3 nights. I mean, it's one of those weird things. We're waiting for them to explode. Right,
and Ronel Blanco is still like one of the biggest positive surprises in the majors, and they're 12 games below 500. My God,
yeah, that's maybe the most puzzling thing so far in the first quarter of the season. All right, before we let you go, Dodgers up on the Padres by 6.5. No surprise, Ohtani picking up where he left off in Anaheim.
Yeah, Dodgers are out of control. Like, you know, fire up the Dennis Green. They are who we thought they were, soundbite. So they've won 14 of their last 16 games, and they've allowed 31 total runs. That's fewer than 2 per game. They have 11 pitchers on the IL, 12 if you count Shohei Ohtani's, you know, not pitching.
Right, like true.
If you could take their injured pitchers and say, hey, all these guys are going to be healthy tomorrow, I think like 20 of the other MLB franchises would trade their entire staff for the Dodgers' injured pitchers, and they're allowing 2 runs per game. Like, oh my God. That's why I was saying, like, it feels like, you know, the Braves are lacking in something because the Dodgers are just on another level right now.
Do you think?
When I was looking at that injured, because when Bueller came back the other day, then I was just looking at all the guys who were still injured, and I had no idea it was that, like, number. I was like, oh my gosh, like, they've got 11, 12 guys who, and you look at the names like May and Gratterall and all, I'm like, these are like really good pitchers and they don't have them yet.
Is their payroll $1 billion? I mean, come on. I mean, that's crazy.
I know it's north of $300 million. I'm not sure what it is exactly.
It's all that and then some, I would think. Is Soto going to re-sign, you think, with the Yankees?
I don't know. I know the
it's going, you know, the well
Mets
right
are,
now.
Mets are going for it. They'll, but yeah, he's looking like he's going to be the MVP right now. So maybe it'll be, you know, just like the Aaron Judge situation where he plays out his contract year and then re-signs for an outrageous amount of money. But okay. I know the Mets are going to make a huge offer for him.
All right, and then how do you look back at your boy Strasburg's career now that he's officially retired?
Oh man, I was at the game, was it July 2nd, 2010 or whatever? I think it was his second start. I don't think I was at his debut, but it was magical, right? Everybody knew something incredible was happening, and it's just, man, I feel like we're almost there with Mike Trout right now, where it's just was so great and just can't stay healthy, but at least Trout had, you know, 8 really solid, fully healthy seasons. I mean, right. Strasburg, if he had stayed healthy, easy Hall of Famer. I don't think that's going to be the case now, and that we're mostly going to remember him for the, you know, 7-year, $245 million contract where he pitched like 30 innings. Like, we're going to forever be bringing that up as the worst contract of all time, even though he could have been one of the best pitchers of all time.
To me, it's what I look at with Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor.
Right.
Yeah. Well, at least you got the World Series title out of your guy, and he was the World Series MVP. So you got the one out of him for the Cubs. Like, we had the Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor. We didn't get that World Series out of those guys.
Yeah. I was looking through somebody's power rankings this morning. They mentioned that Paul Skeens is coming up there. Like, you know, nobody's been this exciting since Mark Pryor was coming out of college. I was like, don't say that name. You're going to curse him.
Let's hope not. He's Kerry Miller, sports writer for Bleacher Report. Follow him on Twitter at Kerrence James. You can listen to him every Thursday with us talking baseball here on Sports 56 Mornings. Thank you, Kerry. Have a great week.
You got it. Take care, guys.
You too.
If you've got a move coming up, you want to make sure you get the professionals to do that move for you. You don't want to try and do it all yourself. Way too much stress. Way too difficult to do that. You don't want to be asking your friends to help you, putting them in charge of things. Get the professionals. Talk to the folks at Black Tie Moving. 901-316-6196. That's the number. You can go to the website, blacktiemoving.com/benefits. You go online, you can find 5-star ratings from people who've used Black Tie Moving. People rave about the service they get with Black Tie Moving. During the move, you've got a moving concierge available to you to answer any questions that come up. When you talk to them originally, they're going to work with you, come back up with that plan for your move, to make sure it's exactly what you want, whatever you need from them. They're going to take care of that. And then also, you get a no-obligation quote up front, so you know exactly what it's going to cost. No surprises when it comes to Black Tie Moving. Again, 901-316-6196, or go to blacktiemoving.com/Memphis. Talk to the professionals. Don't try and move it all yourself. Talk to the professionals from Black Tie Moving.
You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studio, we are Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now, back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gaddis Jewelers.
Genuine diamonds, baby.
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Sean Merriman is going to join us in about 10 minutes at 9:05. In the meantime, did you read the story? And I forget who had the story. I'm not sure if it was Bob Harrig, or it was Jason Sobel, or somebody else affiliated with golf, about the whole, excuse me, backlash on, or about Rory McIlroy?
I did not. I saw something about him, but I did not read the story. No.
So Rory McIlroy was on the policy board, left the policy board, and was trying to get back on the policy board. And sources, so it's whoever wrote for Golf Digest. Sources tell Golf Digest that Patrick Cantlay, Jordan Spieth, and Tiger Woods were among the PGA Tour player directors who didn't wish to welcome Rory McIlroy back to the policy board. So You know, Cantlay, I don't know what type of relationship he has with McIlroy. I imagine it's not great. Spieth, I don't know. Tiger and Rory, I thought they were boys. But the three of them, again, all part of the PGA Tour policy board as player directors. There's only five or six. Joe Ogilvie's on it, the former PGA Touring Pro. But for whatever reason, they didn't want him back, including Tiger Woods. If this story's true, and again, Golf Digest sticking to its sources. I don't know what it does as far as causing more or causing a rift between them. But McIlroy, I mean, he can't feel good about that.
Probably not.
He's waved the flag for the PGA Tour and then left for whatever the reason was. I guess there was something that upset him that he left. I don't think it was just a schedule type thing. He was too busy because he wanted to come back and jump on the board. In the meantime, we continue to see story after story after story coming from whether it's the LIV side or even coming from the PGA side that this rift is growing deeper. And they both believe that the best thing for golf would be to come together and to figure something out where all these players are on the same page as far as majors are concerned, as far as Ryder Cups and President's Cup. I was about to say America's Cup. President's Cup. And that you pick the best players available, whether or not they're playing LIV or whether they're playing the PGA Tour. Because I think the LIV will go on. It's just whether they can come together and all be a part of one club. And so Mickelson's written about it again recently. Others have written about it. McIlroy said that he thinks it's now the best for golf. We certainly know that from viewership as the numbers are down. You want to make sure that at every major and all the big events, if you can get them all with the best players from everywhere, that's the best it can be. I mean, it's like saying the NFL, you had a quarter of their players that aren't able to play. They're playing in some other professional league, some international or European league. And that would be it wouldn't be the nail in the coffin or anything like that. It wouldn't be that extreme. People still love their NFL. It wouldn't help. And so putting these guys together, I think, certainly will. Whichever way they can do it, I don't know, but they need to do it. I think everybody's in agreement on that. We're in agreement that Smoke Slam is the world's ultimate barbecue showdown, and it's coming to Memphis May 16th through the 18th, so we're right around the corner. It'll be held at Tom Lee Park on the river in downtown Memphis. We're putting the festival back in barbecue. More than 50 teams competing for the largest cash purse in barbecue history. Live music for the 3 days from the likes of War, the Barquets, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Tone Loke, Rob Bass, Young MC, DJ M, Walk. They'll all be there. A fan-first experience like no other. They'll have celebrity chef live cooking demos. You can indulge in mouth-watering barbecue samples from the greatest pitmasters in the country. They'll have fireworks every night, so you'll have that carnival atmosphere with a Ferris wheel, carousel, games for the kids. Single day, general admission tickets only $25. The three-day GA pass is only $65. For more information, to purchase your tickets, go to smokeslam.com. Smoke Slam, the world's ultimate barbecue showdown, coming to Memphis May 16th through the 18th. When we come back, Sean Merriman joins us to open up hour number three. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56, 98.5 FM.